My name is Jack, and some of you may have read or heard a story about me, by me, a few years back. I'm writing this from the same shitty laptop that I used to drunkenly post the showers on Reddit a little over 5 years ago. It spent the better part of 2 years at the bottom of a box in my bedroom closet. I haven't had much use for it recently, and honestly, it isn't in the best of shape. The damn thing takes about 20 minutes to start up properly and dies the instant it's unplugged from its charger. Some of the keys are missing, some of them stick. I spent a good amount of time clumsily cleaning sugary soft drinks cut with whiskey out of every nook and cranny, but a thing can only take so much abuse before it just goes. Night. I got lucky. She managed to boot just for me. I think she has one more decent story left in her. For better or for worse. I don't really remember writing or posting either part of the showers. I do, however, remember feeling simultaneously listless and restless around that time period. I was tremendously unproductive, not working in my chosen field, and I had too much free time to spend thinking about those facts. I had told the story to some friends at the bar one night and shaken some memories loose, which led to that post. So I woke up one evening and hopped on my laptop to find that the story thread was left open. I had typed it directly into the submission box, not leaving myself anything to edit. I just forced it out of me over a couple of long, drunken nights and threw it up on the internet for everyone to see. I tried to read it, but even outside of the memories that I would have rather avoided, each spelling and grammatical error made me want to shoot whiskey or chug bleach. I went with the former, and as far as I could remember, never made it through the whole story as it was written. It seems pointless to go back and read it even now. I've lived through this all enough times in my head. I don't need to do it to myself. I did read the comments, though. I may have hated myself, but seeing a bit of interest in my work gave my ego a boost, if only for a moment. I went back every now and then to check on them, but for the most part, I was forced to continue with my stagnant life while the story spread quietly around the web. I worked as a bartender. At the time, I split my free hours between sleeping and drinking. These occasionally overlapped or synced up with work. It was a vicious little loop that I had carved for myself. I wasn't a writer, like I had hoped to be at that point in my life, so getting to play the part on the internet for a few minutes, even now, every now and then, helped to break up the monotony of reality. Over the course of the next several months, I received several emails and friend requests from other old classmates or strangers who had taken an interest in my story. My former classmates' messages generally consisted of their memories of Mr. Mays and his story, asking nothing in return. I had guessed that most of them were either married or lost and needed a dose of nostalgia as a pick-me-up. Who could blame them? Though some of them actually wanted to meet up and grab drinks and really get into the past. I lived half a continent away from the town where I had attended Mr. Mays' class at this point, but that didn't stop me from making empty offers of company to several different people, if our paths ever were to actually cross. Now, I did wind up grabbing a beer with one guy who was just passing through on a summer night in Denver, but it wasn't what I was expecting. I'm 99% sure that he had never met Mr. Mays or myself. He dodged specifics when I asked him questions and repeated a lot of my statements back to me in agreement. I remember him nodding his head a lot and saying, "Yeah, that's right," over and over again. He was picking up the tab, so I didn't notice a lot of this until the next afternoon. That was also the last time I met up with anyone from the internet. I also got a surprising number of requests for the specific coordinates of the showers, from a wide variety of personalities. There were people offering money, transport, even what was essentially militia support if I would take them there. Like it was some sort of guided tour. I turned them down, but would be lying if I didn't consider accepting some cash in exchange for the coordinates of a random barn that I could pull up on Google Maps. I didn't, though. As foreign and as surreal as the whole thing was, I did take pretty immediate notice of the power it gave me over people. It felt like I was back around a campfire with a group of friends hanging out and them listening to my every word with a much larger audience. It all started innocently enough. I'd be out with a friend looking for some decent conversation or a better lay, and my friend would bring up the showers and ask me to tell the story, and I would fight him on it for a bit before caving. Ordering another round, launching into some variation of the bit. It did work like a charm. It seemed like every time I went out, I ended up with a new friend or a new notch on my belt. I hardly had to try. I was just drunkenly wandering down memory lane, and after a while, I had narrowed my sights, only bringing out the story for certain people for very specific ends. I used it to get laid. It's as simple as that. I would talk to a girl for a little while, get to know her just enough, take a guess at some of her fears, and work them into the climax of the story. I faced down ghosts, encountered demons, even had spiders rain down on me from the shower heads, but I made it out intact every time. If ever so slightly worse for wear, I was just damaged enough from the experience that a pretty girl might feel some sympathy for me, which I would thank her for, while reaching out for her hand or maybe grabbing her leg. All roads lead to the same place. Hers. I would stumble back into my barren apartment every afternoon, throw on some different clothes, head back out to the bar. Whether it was for work or play didn't really matter. Like I said, all roads, right? I don't know how long I spent in this piece of shit phase, but I do know that Karen broke me out of it. Initially, she was just the next in a long line of women that I had yet to woo. We met at a bar, where I told her a story which led her to my place, but instead of her passing out after sex, we stayed up and we talked. It didn't feel like needless bullshit, either. I felt like she understood me. And I her. In reality, I think we both just liked getting really messed up and swapping stories about our shitty childhoods and mental ailments with someone else so that we wouldn't have to make excuses for being alone. We actually did have the mental stuff in common, though. Two different kinds of bipolar disorder. We thought that in some strange way it meant that we were perfect for each other. I don't need to be told how stupid that sounds. Karen also had a degree in political science from Rutgers, a wicked right hook, and one of the most persuasive and charismatic personalities that I have ever encountered. I worry that sort of thing isn't going to come across here because of what this is all ultimately leading to. I just don't want to do her a disservice. We didn't end up together for a year and a half because we were awful for each other. At that point in my life, I was both lost and an asshole, and I had turned her into a concept or an archetype in my head. She was the Nancy to my Sid, the Bonnie to my Clyde, and we were probably headed down the same path as both couples. I guess looking back, I had fit her into that awful, manic, pixie dream girl trope in my head. I was a lost guy looking for a girl with hair the color of a mood ring to solve the complex problems that was me. And any given day, she was the love of my life and my partner in crime. And the next day, she was my antagonist, an obstacle to overcome. It was all part of this story that I had seen play out in the movies and books so many times before, but in the end, it was me trying to fit a square peg in a non-existent hole. She made me feel good about myself, though, and I'm pretty sure I loved her. It's just that I was simultaneously loving and using her without realizing it. This wasn't to say that she didn't get use out of me. She started coming over to my place after we had spent a couple of nights together, and she never really left. Items of her clothing and her toiletries started showing up around the apartment, and I just kind of went with it. There was one night where I brought up how we had never actually talked about living together before it had already happened, and that night somehow ended with both of us blacking out in tears. But by the time happy hour rolled around the next evening, we were as good as new. It wasn't an issue at the time. We just sort of fell in together. Though I know this probably sounds unhealthy, and I mean, it was. We got off track. Karen took a great interest in my stories. The showers, particularly, interest her because she had come across a reading of it on a podcast or a YouTube channel and knew about it before she had ever met me. She thought I was messing with her at a bar, trying to take credit for a story someone else had lived, but I was able to convince her, and she didn't let it go after that. After long nights, we would lay in bed together, and she would ask me to tell her the story again, like some sort of morbid bedtime story, and each time I told it to her, I would embellish a little more, or shake loose a new memory pulled from deep within my imagination. I don't know if she actually believed it, or if she just wanted to, but it became our thing. But of course, the story eventually wasn't enough. She wanted to live it. Can we go there? Let's go to the showers. She wanted us to go together and face them down like some sort of boss fight. She consistently told me that it would be good for me to go back there and get perspective. She was convinced it would help me pick up writing again. Karen always told me that I had such good ideas, but that something held me back from letting them loose. She genuinely wanted to help, but I couldn't see how this would do that. Now, it seemed obvious. I think another aspect of her interest in the showers was just honest fixation. We both had a tendency to key in on a particular subject and dig deep into it until there was nothing of interest left to uncover. This meant that her attention genuinely burned intensely before quickly fizzling out. My refusal to indulge her one last wish and take her there? Well, that just kept her going. She would strategically pick out moments where I was just drunk enough to loosen my lips, but not so drunk that I was off in my own world to ask about the place. Occasionally, she would bring up a piece of information that I had told her about the showers while blacked out that would resonate with me enough to put my arm hair on edge. Even if I couldn't conjure the memory while sober, my body recognized it. I knew she was getting closer to a something in me that I didn't want to address, but I never stopped her outright. I don't know if I even believed my own story anymore. I just felt a bit sick when I thought about it. She persisted, using every method in the book to try to convince me to take her there. Every new detail, real or otherwise, would motivate her to push me harder on the subject. It was the middle of winter when I caved. We were living in Fort Collins, Colorado. At this time, which was only a short drive from Broken Bow, Nebraska, I had still maintained my ground when it came to making a trip there. Claiming that I didn't remember that we didn't have the time. That I had forgotten exactly how to get to the farmhouse, which are both partially true. But like I said, she knew when she could get the best of me. We were sitting on the couch, following a long night of bar hopping and friend drama. Luckily, we had found ourselves on the same side of this particular situation, which meant that night was going to close quietly. We were snuggled together under a blanket and watching the Coen brothers, that 2013 flick Inside Llewyn Davis. Karen was watching while I split my time between nodding off and attempting to read a screenplay that a friend of mine had sent to me. I had seen the film a half dozen times at this point. In it, a struggling folk singer loses his way after his partner commits suicide. Well, spoilers. Karen and I shared a mutual fascination with the subject of suicide, so it was only a matter of time before one of us said something. "I would hate to jump off a bridge, I think," she said. "There's a chance you live when you're hitting the water and you'll wind up, what, paralyzed or something? I guess I'd feel like an even bigger waste of space if I couldn't kill myself properly." I wasn't sure if she was actually wanting to get into it or not, but I bet. "I couldn't jump," I said, pulling her closely and closing my eyes. That's way too much buildup and pressure. Too much time to regret it when you're falling, you know? It wasn't a taboo subject with us. It was difficult to explain to those unfamiliar with us lifelong suicidal ideation, but discussing it in blunt and honest terms is comforting. When faced with it every single day, familiarizing oneself with something typically viewed as morbid, we shined a light on it. Know your enemy and whatnot. Even if it was concrete or lava below me, I couldn't do it. I don't want anything flashy, honestly. Give me a benzo and a couple of pints of tequila. I'll go gentle. You know, maybe I would jump, Kieran thought out loud. But I would do it from, like, a plane. I just want that one last rush of adrenaline.
You could stay alive and get a lot more of that, I replied.
Not with those kinds of stakes.
She had a point.
I just want to be quiet. Let me drink myself to death with a book or some relaxing music to play me out, you know? Probably some Bright Eyes. Kieran was quiet for a while. The character in the film overdosed in a bathroom stall and she spoke up. I just don't want to go like that. You know, at the very least, I'd want to be around friends or even family if no one else is available.
I was nodding off.
Kind of like your teacher.
I stirred.
She hadn't brought up the story in a while, and when she did, she never let into it with Mr. Mays.
I guess, I said. If I fell asleep, she'd be forced to leave it for the night.
Let's go, bub. She said.
Go where?
No.
I knew. Liquor store's closed, I grumbled.
Nebraska! It's late. Next week. I'll take off work. I'll get someone to drive us.
Why would anyone want to drive us to Nebraska?
Brian seems interested.
In Nebraska?
In your story. You could write about it. It's been a while since you've written. I could bring my camera. From the way you describe it, I'm sure that I could get some good pictures.
I was getting uncomfortable. But I was offset by my exhaustion. I don't want to go. I didn't put up much of a fight.
Please? Please, for me.
You never go anywhere. And the apartment gets stuffy, and it's my birthday next month.
Okay, all right, I said, trying to appease her so that I could drift off.
What about the cat? The next thing I knew, we were packed up and leaving the comforts of home for Nebraska.
I had said yes to the trip, then fallen asleep. And by the time I woke up the following afternoon, Kieran had already secured one of our friends as our chauffeur and was requesting time off of work.
It fit my schedule.
She was so happy, and I was on quite a bit of Xanax, but I wanted to keep the good times rolling. With our schedules and switching moods, happy was something that was hard to come by. So I thought about that as we packed up my car. I was asleep before we made it out of town. I woke up in another dimension. The view out of my window was an icy tundra that hurt my eyes. I hadn't seen that much sun in months, and the ice amplified it. Our friend Brian was behind the wheel of my shitty 2005 Ford Escape as we flew down the interstate towards Broken Bow. Everyone called him the responsible one in our group of friends, because he wouldn't get behind the wheel after drinking any booze at all. What only Kieran and I knew was that he would be high as a kite while driving us all home and telling us how he was the only one of us not destined for a DUI. But he hadn't been in an accident yet, so we didn't say a word. Kieran sat shotgun with a Sonic cup in her lap. If I knew her, which I did, she had poured out 3/4 of her drink and filled the rest of the cup with vodka. She noticed after a minute that I had woken up.
Hey, bub. Sleep well?
She asked, turning around in her seat to face me. A vapor of vodka and a hint of cherry limeade flooded my nostrils and burned my eyes. Kieran refused to travel long distances without what she affectionately called a roadie. She had adopted the term from her late father, who killed himself when she was 14. He opened his wrists over the sink in the bathroom while Kieran was doing homework in her upstairs bedroom. Then Karen's mom was doing an intern in her office at work. Her preoccupation with suicide at least came from somewhere logical. She had always idolized Randy, her dad, and hadn't spoken to her mother in a decade. She told me this story often, frequently reinforcing the idea that any of her idiosyncrasies, bad habits,
that related to Randy were exempt from criticism. I made my only sensible move in this situation.
Extra cup is for you, my dear. Half and half.
She winked and handed me the styrofoam cup of cure-all. I needed it. My jaw throbbed. I've always had a problem with grinding my teeth in my sleep. It was so bad growing up that my canines actually grew outward like vampire teeth. It hadn't been an issue in some time. I figured that the previous night of partying alongside the anxiety about the road trip had just taken a toll. I took a sip of the drink and winced. About one quarter limeade, three quarters cheap vodka. Burn it, I groaned. I guess it fits the scenery, Karen laughed. Nothing except the frost-covered remains of last season's harvest and frozen dirt surrounded us for miles. I stared out over the miles of repetitious backdrops for a couple of hours. Barren earth occasionally gave way to tufts of shown trees that reached futilely towards the gray heavens above, seemingly ignored. They now resembled petrified roots that had aggressively snuffed out any hint of life that had once inhabited the numbers. Every now and then I was able to spot the rusted remnants of a vehicle or a crumbling shed hidden amongst the branches, surely soon to be overtaken by the vindictive woodland. The three of us passed the time by fiddling with a barely functioning tape-to-auxiliary cord converter that we had been able to play music off of our phones with. But unfortunately, even when we had gotten it to work, it was still a crapshoot, thanks to a spotty G4 connection on the planes. Karen and I chain-smoked Camel menthol cigarettes, much to Brian's dismay. He smoked too, but would only touch the baby blue packs of American Spirits, which were all natural and burned for an eternity. Smoking anything else, he believed, was just asking for cancer. The drive was familiar. It had me wandering through foggy memories of my last trip to Broken Bow. I was frustrated, getting a bit uncomfortable because of the haze, so I had to drink about it. My own head was keeping me in the dark. Brian and Karen, despite having heard the story of the showers tens of times by this point, when they prodded me for new details once we had crossed the state line into Nebraska, I managed to dodge their inquisitions by telling them how it was a violation of tradition to listen to a band while on the way to the concert. This eased the pressure a bit, but my teeth were grinding and my jaw was aching, and this place was bringing something out in me, leaving me anxious and reflexively defensive. Brian had grown up in New Jersey, and despite the relative emptiness of that two-lane highway, he was driving like he was still there. They have no problem with sweeping across lanes without a signal, speeding, or rapidly jerking left and right to exit the interstate on any regular day. As uncomfortable as it might have been to avoid the eye contact of an angry truck driver that Brian had cut off, we always got to our destinations significantly faster than the GPS estimated. However, today, his highway practices were making me queasy. The honking of several angry passersby got to be too much for me, and I threw in my headphones and pulled my beanie over my eyes in an attempt to give me sensory deprivation. I ended up drifting off after a bit. I had a dream that felt vaguely familiar, but I hadn't remembered my dreams in years, so I couldn't be sure. I was back at the bar, frequented during college, the same place where I had last met Mr. Mays a decade ago. The voices of the faceless patrons around the two of us were muted. I sat next to my deceased former teacher, who was sporting a sweater that read, "I'm the birthday boy." Mr. Mays looked up at me from a drink, eyes bloodshot from holding his booze and holding back tears. He didn't say anything, but I slowly recalled the conversation between the two of us from years ago, which rang through my head loud enough to fill the silence. I remembered his friend, the one they had lost. Mr. Mays looked away from me, and into his drink he didn't look back. I heard a noise like dripping water that echoed around the bar. Looking in front of me, I found a highball glass that was filled to the brim with what I had guessed to be whiskey. Without a second thought, I threw it back. It didn't sit well. I pursed my lips. I sat back on the table as the lights around the bar began to dim from the outside. And I rubbed my eyes and I breathed deep to quell the nausea, but it wasn't working. The room continued to dim as the dripping noise rang out around me once again, and I looked at the glass before me to find it filled again, the liquid still rippling from the recent pour. Another drop fell from above, breaking the surface tension and spilling the drink all over the bar top. I looked up to see a showerhead, hanging just beyond the light, dripping liquid. The sound of violently shaking pipes echoed around me, and the showerhead began to shake. It began to erupt, just as I was pulling back to reality with a jolt. I panicked and I thrashed about for a moment. My knee and arm cracked as I moved about, adjusting once again to the real world. "Oh, Buff's easy now," said Karen with a chuckle. We had parked at a rest stop. Brian must have pulled in too quickly and hit the curb, which was what had woken me up. I tasted cherry limeade crawling up the back of my throat, and I felt my stomach rumble. "We're outside of Hastings. Don't know how far. Use the restroom now, or forever hold your peas," said Karen. They opened the door, and the icy wind pushed it up against me, slamming my foot in the door. I pushed my back and rushed against the lot to the surprisingly bustling area. I did my business, washed my hands, attempted to ignore the leaking showerheads in the stalls at the back of the room, and I felt every drop in my chest. I hadn't had anxiety like this in ages. The nausea had come with me from the dream, and I gagged slightly at the sink. Closed my eyes and breathed deeply. I pulled a flask from my jacket pocket and looked around me to gauge the judgment that I was about to receive. The truckers around me didn't take a second look. But a father who was changing his infant at the station next to the door, he shot me a look. And maybe he didn't. I'm not sure why I cared. It wasn't going to stop me. One of the showers in the back turned on full blast. I took a pull from the flask, and unlike my dream, my stomach relaxed, and the gagging ceased. I cleared my throat of whatever had built up prior to the nip of whiskey, and I spit in the sink. It was a bright shade of red. I didn't panic. I just needed to eat at some point. I pushed back through the line of people that had gathered at the restroom door and jogged out back to the car. Karen was sitting inside with the window cracked, holding a dying cigarette halfway out the window. When she saw me, she flicked it out, rolled the window up, gestured for me to hurry up. I hopped inside and we were back on the interstate within seconds. "And don't fall asleep on us again, Bub. We're going to need you to steer us from here, I think," Karen said.
"Just get us to Broken Bow," I said,
staring out over some of the harvested fields that looked like they had been burnt. "I'll guide us from there." I guess I did detours. We continued down the interstate for a while Brian and Karen sung songs and I sat in the back seat working, trying to ground myself. "We're going to need some gas if we're going to be hunting for this place out in the boonies," said Brian. He broke my concentration. "Well, there's only about 10 gas stations around the entire state, so exit where you can," I said. I caught the tail end of a sign that read Broken Bow, but I didn't catch the other information. Within minutes, Brian was exiting the highway and pulling into what appeared to be a gas station. It had the pumps out front and a small convenience store, but behind it was a rickety, single-story house. The design was Victorian, but it was faded and chipped all to hell. Some of the windows appeared to be busted in, the holes stuffed with assorted cloths and rags. I felt a sense of recognition as I stepped out of the car and began to pump gas. Karen was running inside to grab snacks as Brian shouted after her.
"Hey, get me sunflower seeds," he yelled.
She was already inside. Brian looked at me. "Jack, sunflower seeds?
Please and thanks, man."
He closed the door behind him. Before I was able to tell him that I wasn't going inside, I grumbled as I walked into the old station. Brian was driving us, so I couldn't get too upset with him barking orders. I was just irritable and all over the place. The building had a familiar musty smell to it, much to my surprise, starting to help clear away some of the fog that had been bugging me. I was pretty sure that I had been to this particular gas station before. I figured that was pretty likely, considering where we were and the aforementioned lack of stops in the area. It was a neat coincidence. At least that's what I told myself. Karen was up at the counter, cheerily chatting with a young girl who couldn't have been much older than 18 about something or other. The girl was talking to Karen, but stared daggers at me the entire time. She wasn't even subtle about it. I figured I looked nervous and sweaty, so I didn't blame her for keeping an eye on me, but it still made me uncomfortable, and I found myself grinding my teeth. I was attempting to work the pain out of my jaw muscles with my knuckle while aimlessly wandering the aisles. Karen asked the young lady at the counter, point blank.
Do you know about the showers?
The woman didn't miss a beat.
People don't deal with anything relating to that sort of business around here anymore, she said.
My legs locked up, and I turned my head towards her. She was staring directly at me, despite Karen being directly in front of her.
That was all a long time ago.
Her eyes remained locked on mine. I felt the pain in my jaw pulse and my stomach lurch. This was not possible. Consciously and unconsciously, I was rejecting the overwhelming feeling of déjà vu. I raced for the small hallway in the back of the store. I held my stomach and refused to look up at the woman, but I could feel her gaze on me still as Karen pressed her unsuccessfully for more information. I managed to get through the door and locked it behind me before falling to my knees and onto the toilet that sat only a few feet in front of me. I could feel my stomach clenching tightly over and over again, but nothing was coming out. I was violently dry heaving and struggling to breathe. With the pressure behind my eyes and skull building, I forced a finger down my throat. I thought that if I could get whatever this was out of me, I would feel so much better. I was choking on my own finger and seeing stars, eyes on the verge of bursting before I gave up. I didn't need to pass out in the gas station bathroom. That sounded too close to rock bottom for comfort. I sat back, my body lightly glazed with sweat, and concentrated hard on a number of deep breaths in an effort to get my vision stabilized. It was the half-assed version of a grounding technique for anxiety that I had picked up at some point. I could feel the pressure release as I wiped away the torrent of tears that had wet my face. My eyes finally focused on a green picture frame next to the mirror above the sink. The picture frame read, "You can't choose him. You just gotta love him." And featured what appeared to be three generations of women laughing while posing outside of a large green farmhouse. The youngest of the three I recognized as the woman at the counter just outside. Next to her was what I guessed to be her mother. Next to the mother was someone familiar. It was a sweet old woman in a sundress. The same dress that she had been wearing when I ventured into this shop with my friend Steve many years ago. The three of us had a nice conversation about the town and our post-college trip until our motives for staying in Broken Bow were made clear. When she found out that we were in search of the showers, her demeanor changed. She had given us a very stern, measured answer. People don't deal with anything relating to that sort of business anymore around here. That was all a long time ago. I got to my feet, my head spinning and splashing some water on my face. I had burst a capillary in my right eye. It was blood red and diluted, and raining tears. It looked like a mess, but I didn't care. After spitting up a bit of red into the sink, I walked out into the hallway, shooting one last glance at the picture just to make sure that I wasn't losing my mind. It was still the same old woman. I was definitely losing my mind. I quickly made my way towards the front door, knocking bags of sunflower seeds and sticks of jerky onto the floor. Karen was still talking with the girl at the counter. The girl was no longer looking at me. Was she ever? If I didn't know Karen, I would have assumed that she was hitting on the girl. That's just how she was. She had a way with people.
You feel okay?
Karen looked me up and down with a concentrated look on her face. The girl at the counter stared at her.
Did you get sick?
I looked at Karen. The girl. Karen again. Out towards the car. And back at Karen. Must have eaten something bad, I said. Glanced up at her. Bad stomach. Medications. She looked at me and calmly nodded, understanding. She seemed to sense that something else was going on, but I didn't care. Thanks, have a good day, I said. Bolted out the door. And the bell above me rang, I could feel it in my jaw. Karen followed after giving the girl some sort of excuse for my behavior.
Hey, hey!
Karen caught up with me before I got to the car.
What's up with you?
I'm just tired, I said. She saw through it. I took a nip that went down the wrong pipe, got a little sick. It happens, just wanted to avoid her judgy eyes. I gestured back towards the door. I mean, this is Jesus country. I feel like she would try to walk me through a pamphlet or something. Karen appeared to buy it and continued towards the car. I'm not looking to get saved anytime soon.
Who needs Jesus when you have me as your guardian angel?
Karen said with an exaggerated smile and a wink. I faked a gag. You're gonna make me sick again, I said. She kissed me on the cheek. Hopped into the passenger seat of the car, and Brian had put on a Dandy Warhol album and was jamming by himself.
Let's bounce, said Karen.
putting her sunglasses on and lighting a cigarette. I tried not to look back as we drove away from the gas station.
Hey there, everyone who's listening on YouTube, or those of you who are listening on the podcast. It's me, Mr. Creepypasta. And before you head out for the night, I just wanted to let you know about a couple of things. Without you, the show doesn't take place. So, if you guys would like to support the show, or if you guys would like to get your hands on a couple of cool little things whenever new things come out, check out patreon.com/MrCreepypasta. And any support that you guys show, I really appreciate. So everyone who's already donated to the Patreon, I really appreciate it. You guys are amazing. I thank you so much for that. If you guys are looking for more Creepypasta Storytime, there's a new video that's uploaded to this channel or uploaded to the podcast every Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday now. You can be able to get more from me at facebook.com/MrCreepypasta or on Twitter at MrCreepypasta and then the number 0. Thanks so much for listening, kids, and for your support.
And sweet dreams.